It's the great Dante Read Through.
It's the great Dante Read Through, where we are reading through all of the comic strip, The Adventures of Nicolai Dante. Co-created by Robbie Morrison and Simon Fraser from the weekly science fiction anthology comic, 2000 AD.
I'm Simon Fraser.
And I'm Edie Nugent, freelance writer and Simon's wife. Join us as we swashbuckle our way through the Russian Empire of the future. Warning, there will be spoilers. We will be talking in depth about these comics, so if you haven't read them yet, listen at your own risk. To join our book club and read along with us, go to shop.2000ad.com to pick up the books in hard copy or digital.
Today we're reading Hell and High Water, found in Progs 1322 to 1328 and 2002 to 2003.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Edie.
Hello, Irregulars, and welcome back to the Great Dante Read Through.
Yeah, welcome back.
We made it back.
Yeah. Took a bit.
A little worse for the wear there, Simon.
Yes.
We moved, folks.
We moved house.
Hence
the acoustic difference you'll probably hear right now. We haven't worked this out yet. We've got a lot of work to do on
that. No. But if we didn't get the episode out, it was just not going to happen. So we figured, let's just fly by the seat of our pants.
Woo.
Hopefully you'll forgive us if it's
Dante
a little
style.
Rough. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. But it actually felt super good to be doing this podcast again and writing things. And it's all very exciting. I missed it.
Yes.
So Hell and High Water, who wrote it, who drew it?
Well, it's written by the inevitable Robbie Morrison. It's drawn by the wonderful John Burns, and it's lettered by Annie Parkhouse.
Annie Parkhouse. Who hopefully I can secure for an interview sooner rather than later.
We're working on it.
We are working on it. So, we open on a young Dante doing his best impression of the first 15 minutes of Disney's Aladdin.
Yeah.
He's thieving in a fruit market.
Also the jacket. I'm like, why?
Okay. I totally have the same note. The mini Dante coat is a little on the nose for me. It's literally my nose.
It's a little bit there. Yeah.
You know. We know it's Dante.
It's obvious. I mean, it's very brilliantly put together. I mean, it's really well put together, this page. It's a beautiful page. John Burns is on form. Really fine form here.
Yeah, and I really like the difference in the sort of, you know, like line drawing stuff he does for sort of the action scene, the moment of impact when Dante collides with the fruit seller booth owner versus the rest of it being painted. It's a nice touch.
Yeah, it works better, the line work for the fast action. I think, unfortunately, he seems to be trying something here. It's more and more as we get on through this story is that he's trying to push more into the painted, which I don't think works as well as you'd like it to. Tends to be a bit soft. But when he does the line work, it's absolutely perfect. I mean, it's flawless. His line work is amazing.
Yeah. Well, and how old is Dante here? Like 8?
Possibly. 12. That was my guess. Maybe 12. He's maybe a bit runty. I don't know.
Okay.
I think he's
runty.
As I remember, the story happens when he's about 12. I don't remember off the top of my head. I mean,
oh, wait. That makes sense because later when we meet Mina, she's like 12. So
something like that.
There's parallels. All right. Something I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah. So anyway.
Yes.
So Dante's thieving in a fruit market. And who struts in to save our baby Dante from the fruit stall owner who is like rightly pissed at this little miscreant?
Yes.
Sexy Mama Dante, pirate queen of the crop top.
Looking every bit of a pirate queen and Sophia Loren, which is, I think, the brief is exactly written in the script. Looks like Sophia Loren. Bang. Nail on the head.
There we go.
Yeah.
And her hot, like, winter soldier armed first lieutenant. What do we call her?
That's her lieutenant.
She's got a name. I just feel like we don't hear it.
Marguerite.
Is it Marguerite?
Marguerite. I think it's Marguerite.
I'm going to go with Marguerite.
I don't think I ever drew her.
More's the pity.
Well, here's the thing about this whole story going forward is that I don't actually own this book. I don't own any of the collected editions of this series because I didn't draw any of it, so I wasn't sent any copies of it. No, I didn't. I don't know.
We have one of the books.
Well, not the collected editions, not the...
Oh, you mean the Hachette.
The Hachette.
We've only got the trade paperbacks. Yeah. Word. Yeah.
I've only got the stuff I drew. And I think I got the subscriber copies of the Prague, but they're so long gone because, you know, I moved house a bunch of times and Prague's were like the first thing to go because they weigh so much. And it's like, that's, so I don't own this. Mm. I'm currently looking at a pirate copy. Sorry, folks.
Well, we do have a trade paperback somewhere. We have no idea where it is because we are surrounded by walls of books. I've literally put my hands on it. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, my dear. I promise you.
We have like four walls of books up here and somewhere there's enough wood to make shelving.
Oof, somewhere. Someday it's going to happen for us.
Someday my shelves will come.
So these gals here have leather pants for days.
And leather boots for days, mm-hmm. and leather straps and buckles and holsters and half partial steel bustiers. And
gotta love
it. It's a lot. There's a lot going on here.
There's a lot going on. But it's a nice little family scene.
A lot of pirate queen going on here.
As they strut through the market.
I like Burns's version of Dante. It's suitably impertinent.
Mm.
He's obviously a very naughty little boy.
Yes. It is good. It is good. Yeah. Definitely naughty little boy coming through.
Yep.
100%.
Shocking nobody. I don't like how he's got blue eyes, though. That's not good. Dante's got green eyes.
Oh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, we're always mistaking blue eyes for green eyes. Green eyes for blue eyes, rather.
Yeah. Because Katerina's got blue eyes here, too.
Mm.
Anyway.
In any event, they're strutting through the market, and everyone's scowling at baby Dante for getting away with murder because they're all afraid Mama Dante will murder them.
Fair.
And I love this little exchange between Mama Dante and baby Dante. Why do they call you a bitch, Mama? Because I am one. It's really good. I love that. Simple, but great.
Absolute masterpiece, this page. Absolute composition, color, drawing. It's just fantastic. I love it. So good.
Yeah.
So good.
So then Mama Dante scoops baby Dante up in her arms and carries him off to a nunnery that smells like old people underwear and then leaves him there.
Yes. I think it's called a convent, technically. Though I believe Hamlet said nunnery, didn't he?
He did say a nunnery. Get thee to a nunnery. That was absolutely the reference I was making.
Yeah.
But, like, that's some cold shit. Like, what? A nunnery?
I think the word is bitch, I think we're looking at for here.
God.
Yeah.
That's rough.
And the nuns all look like the undead. It's like
they really
terrifying,
do.
Terrifying.
And they have smelly underwear, apparently. Oh, it's just as bad as it could be. So she just ditches him there.
It's a trademark John Burns soft focus panel on Mama here. I'm sorry, Nikolai, you've grown too heavy for me to carry anymore. And it's like, oh.
What does that even mean, though?
She just can't be bothered with him anymore.
It almost sounds like it's meant to be like emotional, but really it's just like, what is it? I mean, what are you really carrying? You're like ruling this place anyway. You own the world strutting around.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you really carrying?
I just can't be bothered with him. I mean, you have to remember he was the child of rape and it's like he's an uncomfortable memory. Even if he is her son, he's like, don't really want
this.
So
you think when she says you're too heavy to carry, it's like in the psychological sense?
Possibly.
Hmm.
Emotional burden? I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know how to apply to play this. I mean, I'm constantly looking at this and going, how would I have played this scene?
Yeah.
I think I probably would have made her look harder than she is here.
I would think so, too. She's too soft here.
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
She should be like looking down her nose at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, across those incredible cheekbones.
Indeed. So, of course, baby Dante breaks free and runs after his mom and her general, only to be then backhanded by this Marguerite?
Marguerite Dumas? I think so. I don't remember.
Marguerite. Yes. Marguerite backhands him into a stack of water pots.
Yeah.
And by the time he recovers from the fall, they're just like gone.
Yeah.
Disappeared into the crowd. So like that was the abandoning?
Yeah.
That's what we're seeing here, right?
That's what we're seeing.
When he's told us that she abandoned me.
This is
she
the
just
secret
like
origin.
Faded into the crowd.
Yeah.
And that was it.
This is his secret origin.
How big is Escondida?
Idea.
Because it's got to be big. Because otherwise I feel like he'd just bump into them again.
I mean, are we assuming this is Escondida? Is that where we start here?
I think so.
Let me check. Hell and High Water. It doesn't mention anywhere. It's Arabic. It's an Arabic market.
It looks a lot like what we see later as Escondida. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Anyway, it looks like some kind of Arabic market.
Okay. So maybe it's not Escondida, and they just, you know, left and he's stranded there.
Somewhat
okay.
vaguely put. Anyway.
All right. So anyway, that's cold. Damn. Yeah.
Poor wet Dante.
Poor wet.
Crying. Not for the first time crying in the wet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a thing for him.
Echo.
It's the first. Oh, my God. It's the first emo Dante. It's like the original emo Dante. Look at him looking up through his little hair. He's sad, kind of looking at his reflection in the water.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's such a moment.
It is.
Such a moment. All right.
It's his secret superpower.
Yeah.
Emo.
Emo Dante. And then next Prague.
And then we cut to such a drastically different. Look at this. Look at this page compared to the one before. Like subdued, really sort of North
Atlantic.
We're
on the gray seas now instead of the rich, colorful market of abandonment.
Yep.
And we cut back to the future, where Dante is sailing the high seas in the wreckage of the Contessa's plane, which she let crash off a cliff with Dante inside when we last saw her.
And then we get the inevitable quote, they fuck you up, your mom and dad, Philip Larkin. The most often quoted quote of any parent.
It's true. I was actually, we just have some nice ocean scenes of the wreckage.
Very atmospheric.
And I do love the little Dante jacket flying as a flag in the wind, hoisted up on the...
Only color in the scene.
on the wreckage of the ship. Mm-hmm. It's cute.
Yeah, very good. Very good
it's
water.
Good.
Very good sea.
But then I was a bit confused as to what was going on in this next page.
Right.
We see Dante's little Rex sidle up to a large boat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see a woman running across a deck. And then what looks like a mini missile shoots out of a launcher of some kind.
I think it's a crossbow bolt.
And hits her in the neck and kills her.
It's drawn in a very kind of missile-like fashion.
It's very weird.
Because look, there's the thing hitting.
Yeah,
so
no, that's what I'm saying.
Bolt.
It hits her in the neck. It's just,
But it's quite small.
I know it's small, but there's a proportion thing happening here that's just very weird for
me.
And I kind of don't know where she is based on just seeing Dante's ship dock. I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bit murky.
The whole thing was confusing me a little bit for a minute.
Yeah.
I got a little lost. But anyway, where was she running? Was she running to Dante's ship?
Yeah,
like,
it's not super clear.
Okay. Anyway, she dies in front of Dante in a heap while several sea-worn thugs look on. And Dante then dispatches them with a verve that seems to forget he's been like starving at sea for like how long. This is the big mystery of this entire story arc to me, is where Dante's energy comes from. He's been starving at sea.
Where does any of his energy come from? He's always got far too much energy.
But this is like, I mean, he's been starving at sea. I don't know how much more I can emphasize
maybe
that.
Maybe these guys are just really rubbish.
Well, everyone in this thing is rubbish then, because
true.
We see him eat nothing. He goes from battle to battle and somehow stays
in fighting,
licking
fish
and ticking.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know.
But anyway, Dante then finishes, like, I mean, he takes on all of these dudes and finishes killing off like 7 people.
Wow.
I counted.
Yeah.
7.
Yes.
7. I counted.
All right.
In the overhead shot, you can see on the next page.
A lot of people.
On the overhead shot, there are 7 bodies there, and those are the two little kids looking over Mama, who we find out is Mama, because one of the bodies that Dante throws in this melee crashes into the hiding place of 2 adorable urchins, a brother and sister team.
Yep.
And when the urchins realize everyone is dead but Dante, they rush to the deck crying Mama at the crumpled body of the woman who got the fatal neck shot.
Yep.
And Dante then says she was trying to lead them away from her children, which is like this big moment, like the mom was being noble. And I'm like, lead them away from her children where? They are on a boat on the ocean? What are you talking about? Very strange to me. Anyway.
Yeah.
Moving right along.
Distract attention. Let's just say that. Anyway, there's some things in the water here which are obviously...
Where are the kids going to go? Yeah. Are they going to ride the evil dolphins home? Like, I don't know. Anyway, so Dante then feeds the bodies of all the people he's just killed to some weird-looking alligator sharks.
Yeah,
and
shark gators.
Yes, and manages to talk the older sister out of crossbowing him.
Yeah,
convincing the kids that he's not a bad guy like those bad guys.
Yeah.
He's like a fun bad guy.
I'm a different kind of bad guy.
That's right. And Big Sis then tells Dante that her mom is at peace because she's free of their father, the Kraken.
My goodness.
And
why would you even marry someone called the Kraken? The Kraken. I mean, surely that's got toxic masculinity written all over it. I mean,
spoiler alert, it's not by choice.
Yeah, okay.
So there you Fair. Go. And then the sun, just as she says, the Kraken. We get an exterior shot of the ship and the sun's setting.
The Kraken.
It's like very moody on the reddish seas.
Don't think that's the way that ship sails, because I think it's supposed to be a hydrofoil, but hydrofoils sit flat on the water unless they're actually under power. So I don't think that's how that works. Anyway, quibble.
Okay.
But yeah, great. Well done. Very great colors here.
Mm-hmm.
Great body language. Splendid stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we begin the next prog.
Episode 3.
Mm-hmm. So we get a shot of the plane wreck. being towed behind this new seafaring vessel that Dante has commandeered from all those 7 people he killed.
Right.
And Dante talks with the little boy. On the deck of the now empty ship, while Big Sis is below deck saying goodbye to her mother's body.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully painted.
Yes. And Dante and the boy swab the deck of human blood and gristle while roughhousing with their mops.
Well, there you go.
It's a charming and gory scene.
That's you want a blood-soaked mop in your face. That's how you educate children. That's how we do it.
They're literally standing in blood and gore.
Yeah. Sweet.
So then
a sweet father-son moment or something.
Oh my god. At least he ends up dunking the kid in like the bucket which ostensibly has clean water in
also, sword fighting with a wet mop, not easy. You can't do it. I mean, I have used wet mops recently, unfortunately, to my horrible memory.
A sewer issue.
Yeah, sewage issue. Don't even start.
The joys of home ownership.
But wet mop, that's a heavy thing.
Yeah.
It's got a very heavy end.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really swing it around like that.
Well, hey.
I quibble.
The mop Shock is what's horror. Really upsetting you. Yes. The mop.
Yes.
So then Big Sis comes upstairs and comes upon this scene.
Big Sis is a little cropped up too there. There's a whole crop top thing going on.
There's a crop. It is a crop. You're so right. Just crop tops everywhere. Mm-hmm. This is like the kiddie version of the crop top though.
Yeah.
This is, you know, it's kind of a cute kid outfit. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's inappropriate. I'll say that much. Sure. I mean, her midriff is showing, but it's like kind of a cute kid way. It's not tight or anything, you know?
I mean, in fairness, Dante gets pretty much naked.
This is a 12-year-old girl. You can't compare those two things.
Sure.
But she kind of looks like she's wearing a circus outfit or something to me. It's got that kind of vibe to it.
Long boots.
But in any event, Dante then has a touching scene with Big Sis, who tells Dante she's basically numb at this point, which, like, fair enough. And Dante has a little speech he gives her where he talks about how the people we love are not in their physical bodies, but they stay with us in our heart and in our head. And he touches his heart and he puts his hand out and touches her head. And the way this is rendered and written, like, is actually... I find it incredibly touching for being very cliche.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually got choked up reading this part.
Oh, okay.
Which surprised the hell out of me, I'll be honest.
I mean, it seems sincere.
There's something about the way he touches her head and says they're also in here.
Mm-hmm.
The gesture of, like, touching a child's head and then also saying that. There's, I don't know. Yeah. I'm starting to go again.
It works.
It really does work. It does work. Anyway. Effective.
I love how he paints the sea and the ship on the sea. It's just great. I mean, it's really.
I mean, the way the ship moves through the water and the wake of the water of the ship that's foaming up around it is incredible.
Amazing. Yeah, really excellent stuff.
Really lovely.
Just really good at
the shadows.
Stuff.
I mean,
so good at this. I'm so glad he did this and not me. yeah. It wouldn't have looked like this if me and Gary had done it.
So then Big Sis says her dad is Lord of the Reavers, which sounds great. I mean, we already heard Kraken, now it's Lord of the Reavers.
It sounds like a Scottish country music outfit. The Reavers, hey, achtenoo. We'll do an HM reel now. Now for night, the first time tonight, you'll hear The Reavers with Jimmy McCunty. Sorry. The Reavers. I think they also popped up in Joss Whedon's was it Serenity.
They did. I was thinking of Serenity. Well, it's. I mean, it's. Yeah, it's. You know, the whole. Wait, what was the show Serenity or the movie Serenity?
Firefly.
Yeah. I knew there was something else. Serenity's the movie. Yeah. But they're in both. Reavers are, yes. They show up in both. Yeah, I was totally thinking that the whole bad. Time, too. The big bad, yes, indeed.
The kind of chaotic, evil space pirates.
These Reavers have nothing on those Reavers in terms of intimidation. Yeah, no, I'm just going to say that right here. But anyway, her dad's Lord of the Reavers, and just to make sure we hate this guy, she tells us that old Daddy Kraken took her mother for himself when she was Mina's age, when she was Big Sister's age.
Lovely.
Which looks to be about 11 or 12. So
more rape.
Just so we hate him even more, we learn that Mom and kids were running away from Daddy Kraken because Mom didn't like the way Kraken Daddy was looking at Mina.
Oh, joy.
We're really laying it on thick.
It's like double super incest rape.
All right, enough with saying the R word here, man. All right, let's not keep pushing this.
Anyway, sea monsters.
Yes, sea monsters. So apparently the mom and the kids were heading for Escondida. She says that, which is where Dante was doing. I thought where Dante was doing his Aladdin thing and playing with nuns, but you think maybe that was a different location.
I don't know where that was.
Anyway,
Morocco or somewhere.
The kids spot dolphins and are excited until they surface and reveal, like, the thing from the Black Lagoon faces and claws on fish bodies.
Yeah. I'm not sure what fish things do with such large arms, but, you know, what am I
doing? They kind of...
Sure.
Wave around like T-Rex arms in the water.
Just a flapper. Great, though. Scary, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, they're intense looking. I mean, I think the face is a little goofy. Just something about the face, a little goofy. I mean, the teeth definitely look intimidating, but the sunken in ears and beady black eyes.
Yeah, I think the trick would have been to make the eyes even tinier. Yeah. So they can basically like faceless things. Anyway.
Dante makes quick work of these. They're genetically engineered Kreelers, which are human hybrids or something, grown in the Pacifica Rim gene pools for Reaver reconnaissance.
Right.
And I think Pacific Rim gene pools sound like a lovely place for a vacation.
Yes.
But before you can say Pacific Rim gene pool three times fast, we see the Reaver ship on the horizon.
Sort of Victorian megalith. Very odd.
Yes, it does. It kind of looks a little New York City skyline-ish.
Right.
But
odd.
A ship.
It's got a cathedral and a boat and a barge. Then we have...
And they have Dante and his inherited kids in their sights. And then we get our first...
Sort of Fu Manchu. It looks a bit...
Well, here's the thing. We get our first sight of old Daddy Kraken sitting on a throne shaped like a king cobra surrounded by armored thugs. I thought he had kind of a Spock mixed with Blackbeard thing going on.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Here.
It's supposed to be the South China Sea or something. It's definitely skirting very close to
Oh, just
some,
wait. I mean, yeah. my feeling is the art here... Mm-hmm. is like acceptable. It doesn't actually look really racialized to me, but just wait. Just wait till the next proc.
Right.
This is our Big Daddy Kraken. He vows to make the kids eat Dante's heart as penance.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, he's jealous. Like, it's always hard to be the bio parent when the step parent is cool, you know? He's like facing off with like the cool new daddy and he's feeling inadequate. They'll eat his heart. I'm having feelings. Anyway, so at the start of the next prog, we get this whole intro about how badass Daddy Kraken is, and you can smell the bodies of his rotting enemies on his ship from miles away.
I don't think vultures come out to sea, but anyway.
Well, that's interesting.
In the future, maybe they do.
Future vultures?
Future vultures are like
they've
sea-going.
Evolved.
Yeah, because seagulls aren't badass enough. You want vultures. I mean, a herring gull will do that. Don't worry about it. I mean, if you want something horrible looking like herring gull.
Really, a herring gull?
Oh, God, yeah. The gulls will pick up parked cars.
Really?
Yeah, no problem.
All right.
Yeah.
Because
they look nice and sleek and modern. They look like iPhones on the air. It's like they're not. They're not nice. They're not nicer than vultures.
Yeah. Vultures just get a bad rap because they're so freaky looking.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. That's just poor marketing. They need a Johnny Ive to read it.
They need
Johnny Ive redesigned the vulture.
They need a publicist.
Sleek. polished.
So, apparently Daddy Kraken is rumored to be raised by wolves in Siberia.
And ninjas. Wolves and ninjas.
We're throwing everything at the wall.
Pirate, ninja, wolf person. Yeah, we're throwing Robbie's like 9-year-old reading list at the wall.
Absolutely. Okay.
Great headpiece for this. The boat figurehead. The figurehead of the boat,
which is
crazy good.
A weird breasted human. What is that?
Some sort of chimera. I don't know what it is, but it's awesome.
But it's got like a eagle head.
It's got a sort of double-pronged eagle head, so there's like two fangs.
If you ever wanted to see an eagle head with long blonde hair and boobs,
this is
worth checking out.
Yeah, it's nuts.
It's weird. Very weird. We love weird, though.
We do.
And the intro voiceover is by our old pal, Maria Beria.
Oh, Maria Beria.
In her book, The Kraken Wakes.
Of course.
Beria is seriously prolific, by the way. I want to, go back and make a list of all of her books.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to know how many there are. Yeah, okay. That's going to be, a rainy day project. Yeah.
Her bibliography
of Maria Beria.
Do it.
The Kraken's men make for Dante's new ship.
Mm-hmm. They're too powerful. We'll never outrun them.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you see this Kraken ship with this incredible figurehead coming at Dante
and Big Sis Mina
on the ship. Yeah.
Yes.
But Kraken's men make for Dante's ship on chess horses.
Yay.
Where'd they get those?
I don't know. War surplus, probably.
I guess. I was really excited to see chess horses.
Yeah.
Dante then just picks them all, the riders of the chess horses, all off with the huntsmen.
Basically doing with the huntsmen what we have always been seeing for a year now. It's why doesn't he just shoot everybody with the huntsmen?
Because
the huntsmen
can kill everything. I was thinking this the whole time I was reading it. I heard you in my head, Simon.
Yeah,
I was
like, ugh. Yeah, okay.
It's finally happening.
Yes.
Little brother then asks... Dante where he got that cool gun, and Dante's like a hot pantsless chick from another dimension,
and then proceeds to lose his shirt.
Well, but then the kid calls Dante the coolest tramp he's ever met, which Dante takes offense to, which I find very strange.
I don't see
that's a good title. That's very in keeping with his brand. But yes, then his shirt gets blasted off.
Right. Yes.
Right. It was rotting off before.
Yeah.
And now it's blasted off.
Now we get topless, but bare-chested and hairless Dante, because he doesn't,
Yeah, he is. He needs his hair.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Burnsy, but you wimped out on that.
That's true.
That's not great. Come on.
It's true.
Dante has
hairy.
Body
you
hair.
You know he's hairy.
He has body hair. And if I'm drawing Dante topless, it's I sit there for hours.
Swarthy. Doing each individual chest hair. Yeah.
Hand-drawn by an artist.
All of his chest hairs have different personalities.
Every single one individually expressed by a highly trained professional. But Burns, no. He's just not doing it. All right.
It's because he doesn't care about a man's chest. That's why. We see him lovingly render every fold of the ladies, but,
All right, fair. In fairness, I think he does good. Dante looks
good. He's very muscly.
He's toned. He's not bulky, but he's obviously toned, and he uses the muscles, so it's he's athletic looking. It's
I'm
good.
Just saying, I don't think he has time for hairy chest.
It's not
chest.
What Burns
it's
is known for.
Spending way too much time on a dude's chest for Burns.
Right. Burns is known for doing women more than more guys.
More goons pour off the Kraken ship, which sidles up to next to Dante's craft.
Mm-hmm.
But he dispatches them all in one big row with the huntsmen.
Yeah.
But just when you think this is too easy for Dante, Big Daddy Kraken appears on deck and grabs Big Sis by the throat.
Oh.
He gets a gross, "she has the look of her mother" line in.
Mm-hmm.
Before I realized what a Mickey Rooney-ish racial stereotype these renderings are on this page. He kind of starts out almost okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time we get a close-up on him choking Mina, it is
Yeah, it's gone full
really
on.
Bad.
Yeah.
I mean, really bad.
That's not great.
I liked him much better as Blackbeard Spock.
Mm-hmm.
We should have just stuck with that.
Yeah.
But then, weirdly, the Kraken, who was all, "I'll make the kids eat his heart," tries to recruit Dante.
Yeah.
It's he has been a real stupendous killing machine, extra.
It's true. I mean, he is an asset to any evil organization who would have him.
Yeah, this prog. again, I just have to say again, we haven't seen him eat anything since he's been starved on the high seas for God knows how long. True. His clothes rotting away were just short enough to reveal his muscly chest.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know the energy. But Dante turns down the job by...
Well, listen, he did superpowered. He has got weapons crest, so
true.
That might somehow synthesize enough to keep him alive. I don't know. We have to accept that.
Thank you.
It's the get-out of jail clause.
That makes me feel better.
Always. That there's always the weapons crest, which somehow saves him from... physical
It's like the Wolverine thing.
Right. It's just
the
like...
the healing factor.
You just hand wave and go, yeah, it's Lawrence Crescent.
That's
like,
what
all
it
right,
is.
Sure. He's super powered.
I mean, and we have established, we've seen his other siblings be very hard to kill, so...
Yeah.
Makes sense. Then, okay. So Dante turns down the job offer by boomeranging a throwing star that the Kraken hurls at him off of his bioblade and back into the Kraken's face.
Ooh.
Which... later, by the way, appears... it's.
By the way, it's a shuriken.
Okay, so it lands in his face. We see a blood splatter.
Mm-hmm.
But then later, he's got like no damage to his face.
Okay.
I think. Anyway,
I don't know.
We'll
get there.
Anyway, yeah, he has no damage later. I remember seeing it. Anyway, so just as the Reavers v. Dante battle is heating up, a bunch of new ships fly in... Mm-hmm. Announcing
and Dante dispatches like how many people here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or somebody dispatches. I mean, it's like the death count here is pretty high.
It's not Dante. He's not killing them. It's from the Black Dragons.
Okay.
So the new ships flying in are strafing the waters.
Oh, okay.
And they are announcing these are their waters. Submit to their authority.
Yeah, it's very hard to do this kind of stuff. It's very hard to do like suddenly go from close up to like long range strafing of individual bodies on a ship from flying. It's like it's stuff right.
Yeah,
it's really hard. I know Burns doesn't like doing it, so like it's, you know,
yeah,
it's difficult.
We
need Ian Kennedy for this kind of thing.
So the Reavers seem pretty afraid of the Black Dragons. And Maria Beria's The Kraken Awakens tells us that the strafing runs that we're seeing drive away the Reavers from coming after Dante, but not before Daddy Kraken makes good on that heart eating thing and just scoops out the heart of one of his cowardly men and chomps on it like a squirrel with a nut.
Because he needs to kill more of his men, because that makes sense. Because, you know, he's his men are like, the death count here is pretty high, as I'm saying.
It's a very odd choice.
It's an,
I do not understand. It looks, it kind of comes off goofy to me rather than menacing. I'm just like, why?
Yeah. I don't know why.
There's so much going on here. Why are we scooping out hearts and eating them? I don't.
Theatrical effect, I think, is the expression.
Okay. So
topless Dante doing a little family selfie.
So this is the beginning of the next
frog
we're seeing.
Yeah, here we go.
And then we are treated to a whole page.
Pacifica.
You're going to want to.
Yeah,
you're going to want
to. Part of a whole thing. It's massive.
Small. There you go.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming.
So a whole page of the Fortress of the Black Dragon. You want to describe what this place looks like, Simon?
It looks like it's designed by Jerry Anderson. It looks like it's some sort of Thunderbird set.
Oh, Thunderbirds.
Which, you know, dates it pretty much exactly on, like, John Burns' influences, I think. It's, like, very kind of sort of futuristic from the 50s or something. It's kind of got that quality to it. The loose painting kind of makes it look like a John Burkey cover a little bit. It's beautifully done. Very
I really
elegant,
like the way it
loose.
Looks.
Yeah, it's very.
I really like the way it looks.
I like the kind of like the hemisphere thing that really works. And
the sort of floating.
And it's
whatever
not,
things
well,
those
it's,
are that go into the.
Yeah, it's
go into these weird hoses underneath
it's,
it.
It's sitting on top of a black smoker, and if you knew Robbie back at this time, this is all he fucking talked about. He talked about these bloody black smokers, like black smoker, this black smoker. Like,
wait, what are we talking about? Black smokers.
Black smokers, these kind of underwater volcanic vents.
Oh.
And the thing about them is that they produce a lot of heat underwater when it's dark, and because there's heat there, and various chemicals, sulfur and so forth, life is there. But this is life on Earth. It doesn't require the sun. So that's what makes them interesting. Anyway, there was a big deal at the time. There was a lot of research, and suddenly like people went down there and made videos of like these incredible crabs and sea life that lives around these black smokers, which are, you know, asolar life. So it suddenly meant like, oh my God, that means you could have life on other planets because you don't need the sun.
Wow.
So anyway, that was the thing. And Robbie was talked a lot about this. And we're all like, Robbie, enough of your black smokers. I'll give you black smokers.
Well...
Anyway, this is a beautifully drawn vista of Pacifica.
Yeah, it looks great. And so these dragons were apparently once a great threat to the Tsar, as the Romanovs were,
right,
until the Cataclysm of 2621.
Cataclysm, not catechism.
I went religious, the catechism.
Your Catholic upbringing is coming
Catholic
out there.
Catholic upbringing, yeah, of 2621 that devastated Japan.
The devastated catechism. And then they all had mass. Yep.
The cataclysm of 2621. There were earthquakes and tidal waves. And the Tsar had to be young back then, 2621, because we start in like 2666.
Yes.
So he had to be like in his 20s. Anyway.
So this lady here apparently.
Wait. We're getting to her. Apparently, with a little more scene setting.
Sorry.
Romanov intelligence says that the Tsar's folks caused the earthquakes by detonating explosives around the coastline. So Japan is just gone now, I guess?
Or something. Or severely debilitated.
And the dragons built this stronghold in Pacifica.
Okay.
And then, yes, we see Akita, Queen Akita, come in on a sumptuous padded litter in a green queen dress and crown. And I just love this legend has it bit here.
Mm-hmm.
Legend has it that to appease the Tsar, Akita Sagawa had herself delivered to him in a life-size golden dragon, naked. Naked is bold. Scandal. Annie Parkhouse wants you to know it's naked.
Naked.
With the severed head of her father resting in her lap, which is really weird and gross.
Weird.
Like, gross in so many ways.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, okay.
Knowing Robbie, he probably found this in research somewhere. Somebody did this, and that was like, oh, right, that's
like,
good.
I'm saving
that's,
that.
I'm using that one.
How could you not? And so Dante and the kids are led to face her. There's this sort of like, you know, whole grouping of her subjects
palanquin
around her. Yes. Yeah. And the captain of the guard, Murakami, goes through this whole like...
I'm not sure if that's named after my friend Kyo. I have a friend called Kyo Murakami.
Oh my God, really?
Yes, and I think Robbie did meet him, so it might have been.
Oh my God.
It might be a reference. I'll tell Kyo this.
Seriously?
One, so I don't think he knows this.
We need to find this out.
Yeah.
Anyways, so then Murakami goes through this like Arbidov level worthy speech about how expositioning how Dante is terrible and wanted for 50 to 75 million rubles if delivered dead, 50 million rubles, or alive, 75 million rubles.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently this guy was friends with Count Pyre.
And Pyre so he had friends?
Apparently he wants to avenge Count Pyre, so they had to be like buddies.
Alright.
It's weird.
Sure.
I'm like, okay.
Okay.
Alright. But
that's how revenge happens in this story. It's always like, you killed my girlfriend, you butchered
my
friend.
My buddy.
You killed my brothers, you killed my cousins. It's like I got and basically Dante's whole life is dodging these people.
So he wants to avenge Pyre,
right.
But Queenie Akita is like, no, scrub him and bring him to my bedchamber.
I like how this whole kind of, the peons and the minions are all like obviously Japanese styled, but she's some kind of like Chinese princess thing. This is some kind of fantasy Orientalism.
You mean with like
the whole styling
sneaky
is like some kind of like imperial Chinese going on. Anyway, it probably doesn't matter because it's the future and it's all mixed up.
It's a mishmash.
Anyway,
we're just putting everything together.
Bit of a mishmash going on here. Anyway.
So, Murakami then tries to like duel Dante because he just can't resist, and Dante doesn't fight fair, and Sucker high kicks him to the ground.
Of course. Because...
That's coming up next.
Coming up.
There we go. Sucker high kicks him in the face. He spits out a bunch of blood.
That could get him on a fully Bergera high kick like that.
Yeah, it was really, it's really impressive. I mean, that is some reach. He doesn't fight fair, Dante says.
Also, this guy's not bowing right. If he's supposed to be doing like a formal Japanese
bow,
you bow you keep your head up.
Right.
But he's like not seeing past his pack. So obviously this is the whole setup is based on the fact he can't see what Dante's doing. Otherwise he'd be telegraphing the kick.
Right, right. You can't get your leg up that high suddenly.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it takes a little while. I don't know. I don't quite understand that. Like I can certainly read it in my mind, like what the script said, and Burns has like executed it as well as it could be. But I'm like, that doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
You might do your knee, perhaps, if you can get close enough. But a full kick is like, that takes like seconds to build up.
Yeah.
And someone can dodge that really easily.
I think just the line of sight here was kind of a
I'm quibbling again. This is the thing about doing action scenes and fight scenes all the time is you're constantly thinking like, how do you do this? How do you practically do this?
And thinking about a lot of kinetics.
Yeah, a lot about kinetics and how you follow it through and how you do it graphically. And it's like, I'm not as good at it as Burns is, and Burns is very good at it. But it's like, you're constantly like going, I can't make that work. And you're trying to make something that looks right. And it's like, it's
I will say it is difficult. A really good shot of Dante's body twisting and, kicking and the perspective. And it is very good.
The balance
very
is perfect.
Very impressive. And the shadows on his body. Very nice.
I don't really like the Dante expression in the last panel there. It's a bit too goofy.
Yes.
I think there's an expression there you could get that would work, but this isn't it. Sorry.
So then we're on to the next prog.
Yes, indeed.
And we get the sexy Queenie's consort scene we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, but Pacifica's changed again. Look, that doesn't look anything
Pacifica
like...
Pacifica at night, yes.
Yeah, but it doesn't look anything like the drawing we had before. It's changed to something else.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's different shape. Okay.
Pacifica
anyway.
By night.
Anyway, sex scene.
Dante is scrubbed in a towel, and out comes Akita, naked and covered in tattoos that are apparently like a color-shifting mood ring on her body.
Fair.
And apparently not pleasuring her is punishable by death if you don't please her.
Pressure's on, Dante.
Yeah, pressure's on. So they go for it. And after a little back and forth repartee... and we have a really nice shot of the two of them all wrapped up in each other. I really like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit mushy for me.
What do you mean mushy?
Just the way the paint is kind of like, it's a bit too soft and kind of, I don't know. I would prefer something a bit more intense.
I like it.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think it's got like a kind of a, you know, it's got like a softness to it that is kind of just, you know, atmospheric, I would say.
Right.
You know, because it's steamy and they're kind of all melting into each other.
So they are, because there's a lack of distinction there.
Yeah.
Or a lack of,
but I mean, I think it kind of says something, you know, about a certain kind of clinch, if you will.
Okay.
That was my feeling. Anyway.
Okay.
I liked it. Maybe I just like that big, sexy haunch of hers sort
it's
of wrapping over
a big,
him.
You see, it's actually occluding. Look, it's actually occluding his arm
she's
there.
She's got a
that's
booty.
A big booty.
Yes, she does. Yeah. So maybe it's just selling me on that. You give me a little side
fair.
Boob and a big haunch and I'm happy.
Fair enough.
So
who could argue?
So elsewhere,
the
kids are chowing down and being babysat by Murakami, who managed to survive Dante kicking him around. And they're
looks like Danny Trejo, actually.
He does a little bit there. They're kind of eating and hanging out, and then all of a sudden they both like keel over.
What parent hasn't thought of that?
What, drugging your
drugging
kids?
Your children?
And then we cut back to more Dante, Akita, sexy times, yes.
Yeah.
And find out that Akita gets all hot for living dangerously by banging the Tsar and his, quote, greatest enemy. And I'm like, is Dante really his greatest enemy?
Certainly his most annoying enemy.
It seems kind of lame if that's his greatest enemy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, sex position happens.
Sex position.
And the Queenie is under constant attack, apparently, by the pirates of Escondida and the Kraken's Reavers.
Okay.
And she suspects that the Tsar is channeling aid to her enemies to, like, keep her from being a threat by keeping her busy.
Fair.
And then she compares the Tsar and Dante as lovers. Things I don't know if we ever needed to know. The Tsar is a selfish lover while Dante is a giver.
Ooh, there you go.
And apparently the Tsar only shows passion in his eyes when he talks about hating Dante.
Oh.
So now...
You mean, does he talk about hating Dante while he's fucking
sex.
Somebody? That's crazy.
Okay.
Well, no wonder there's a big reward.
So now I'm getting some gay overtones here.
Ooh.
Like, is there Tsar Dante gay slash fic out there somewhere?
I doubt it.
I want to read it. I'm going to have to write it.
You might have to write it. I'll draw some. I'll draw that.
Awesome.
We'll do it.
Thank you. Because I think there could be some really cool stuff about, like, you know,
him
taking Dante prisoner and, like, tying him to a whipping post.
If I draw it, that makes it canon. Kind of.
No, but if I write it, then it's not Robbie, so it can't be canon.
That's true.
Yeah. I'll go by the pen name Roberta Morrison. Queenie wants to join forces with Dante to take over the empire.
Didn't they just do that? Oh, sorry.
to take over the Empire. And Dante's like, whoa, that sounds like commitment.
Sounds like a lot of work. Do we need to do that?
No can do.
Yeah. I mean, we're having a nice thing here. Now you have to make it about work.
Now you got
to
make it. And so then she kind of brings up the kids and thinks they're Dante's kids, but he says, no, they're not mine. And then Queenie says, there have to be some little Dantes out there running around. And I'm like, yes, our spinoff comic.
Probably.
The Many Bastards of Dante. Remember we were saying?
Oh, God.
This is the follow-up series.
The super team. Yeah, we could do it.
Meeting all of Dante's offspring that have been sprinkled throughout the land.
Oh my God, that would be I can see how that would be written. Actually, you'd have to, the oldest one would be out there looking for the rest of them because like, wait, there must be more, and basically spend the first like the origin part of the story, like start up, just like searching for Dante's bastards, and then the story is called Dante's Bastards.
Yeah, and the Many Bastards of Dante. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Dante's
it writes
bastards.
Itself.
Yeah. Anyway, Queenie tells Dante he better submit to her will or she'll have Murakami decapitate the sleeping children.
Well,
she looks over the balcony, which creeps me out because that means they've been having all this like loud sex, like just like adjacent to these children.
Yeah. Well, these unconscious
children.
I mean,
I guess they're unconscious, but it still feels too close for comfort for me. But anyway, so he got to submit to her will.
Far be it from me to kink shame, but this is fucking weird.
So submit to her will, and he's like, what do you want from me? So okay.
And he does that weird, I really don't like the way
Burns
does the sword.
I know, you don't like this
sword.
Bioblade
it's
thing.
It's just so kind of like floppy, weak-wristed. So I don't mean that's the way it sounds, but it's like...
Where it's
just,
coming out of his
it's
fingers.
It's just kind of like flappy.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not a strong...
I know.
Sorry, I'm repeating myself.
I know.
Clearly.
Yes. Oh, and he puts his bioblade up to her neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Unconvincing.
So then next Prague.
Yeah, there you go.
Opens with a market scene.
Another market scene.
Very much like the Aladdin flashback.
It looks like these kids' encyclopedias I had when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
You get these great watercolor illustrations of like the Jemaa el Fna market in Morocco, or you get these sort of great educational scenes from around the world, and you can see these beautifully painted vistas done by the illustrators of the day. Mm-hmm. It looks exactly like that.
Yeah.
I'm not quite Lady Bird book. Yeah, Lady Bird book's kind of like this too. It's got that color quality. I think it's maybe gouache or something he's using. It's like it definitely feels very nostalgic to me looking at this
kind
of stuff.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Yeah. Even without the reference, I can totally see the vibe. Mm-hmm. So this is very much like Baby Dante, complete with a raven-haired urchin, but now he's trying to steal the purse of Mama Dante.
Yeah, we definitely recognize that cleavage.
And,
but she's definitely some years
he's
have passed.
He's running into a decidedly older Mama Dante.
Yes, indeed.
Who apparently hasn't changed her outfit in like 30 years.
No.
Must be getting a bit whiffy.
It's the future.
And she gives the kid some coin. Again, saving a kid who like knocks over a booth of fruit. Like being a fruit seller is just not the stall to run, apparently. So Mama Dante then and her general walk through the streets.
My melons. My cabbages. My cabbages. Sorry. Avatar reference.
Okay. I never saw Avatar.
You never saw it?
No.
God, we should watch that.
Why?
Have you not seen it?
Do I have to?
So good. I'm not kidding. It is the best animated show I've ever watched.
Oh, Airbender.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the blue people.
No, of course, they've seen
Avatar.
All right. Well,
yeah, my cabbages. That's right.
My cabbages.
Of course.
Constantly. Yes.
Anyway. I watched Avatar with you and the kid, man.
Man, okay.
We watched it together.
Well, that was, we watched the sequel one.
We watched Korra, but we also watched Avatar before we went to Korra.
Not all of it, just a couple episodes.
It was a lot.
There's a lot of it.
I don't know where you were.
There's a lot of it. Anyway, let's go.
Anyways, so...
So she hands this little kid a bunch of money.
And
she's
then,
obviously nicer to other kids than her own kid.
Well, and then it is many years later.
Mm-hmm.
And Mama Dante and her, was it Margarita?
I think Marguerite. Diego. I want to say something Marguerite.
Marguerite, okay. And Marguerite talk about how Mama Dante seems to be going soft, ordering others to execute people while she doesn't watch.
Yes.
Right? And they discuss how Mama Dante maybe just wants to watch Escondida tear itself apart, like she's tired of dominating it.
Yeah, she says, I hung 25 of the Kraken's Reavers last week in front of everyone. No, I hung them. It's like, oh, right.
You didn't even watch.
Yeah, you told me to.
Right. Okay. So they're sort of, I don't know.
Great.
She's getting tired of life, I guess. We're meant to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's fun. There's a call that comes out over the radio where, whatchamacallit, one of her flunkies calls her Captain Dante, which I enjoyed.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes. That's true.
Runs in the family there. Mm-hmm. And they radio her basically to tell her that an unescorted ship has just left Pacifica. Mm-hmm. Right? And she can't resist that bait.
And she does this goofy smile.
She does, like, yeah. She's happy.
I don't know about the goofy, smile. I don't know about that either. There's that kind of smug, satisfied smile you could do there, not a goofy one.
Yes.
Anyway. Again, I quibble.
So then Mama Dante and her pirate gang capture and board the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Only
to discover. That it is piloted by
a nutso baby Dante. Yay. Toasting his absentee mum with champagne.
Yes.
Yes.
And he's obviously got a change of clothes and he's looking
Yeah, quite, he is looking good. He's got a pirate fabulous pirate shirt on.
Pirate fabulous.
Yes. He's, and I like that his new Dante coat is still short sleeved like it was when he was a little bairn.
Yes.
But like he's got like a nice high neck on it and
yeah,
he's looking good. He's got and then he's got thigh high boots to match Mama's thigh high boots. Do we often see him in thigh high boots?
No, I don't do him in thigh high
boots. Over the knee.
Never over the knee.
Over the knee.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I don't do that.
Yeah. The big reunion.
Hi, Mom.
Finally.
Mom.
Finally, the reunion we've all been waiting for.
Yeah.
And so Dante and his mom have a weird, like, let me toss your general Marguerite across the room kind of reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And I only just noticed at this point in the comic,
okay,
this scene here,
yes,
where he's facing off with Marguerite, that it looks like she's wearing a gold hoop earring and a red and white headkerchief.
Yes.
Which on a black lady.
What's that mean?
Looks kind of Aunt Jemima mammy. That's basically what they all wore. Yes, a headkerchief often red and white.
I think it's supposed to look piratey.
With a big... I know. I'm not saying it's intentional, but it is unfortunate.
No.
It is unfortunate.
I think you can give it a certain amount of slack because it's very piratey.
Listen, stuff doesn't always have to be intentional for it to look off. And I'm just saying, if I was a black person reading this, I'd be like, ee.
Also, I don't even know if... Was Aunt Jemima a thing in Britain? I'm not even aware
of it. No, it probably wasn't. Yeah. But, I mean, this image that Aunt Jemima was drawn from a long history of racial iconography. Right. Yes, yes, yes. The mammy thing. Right. Which was definitely more of a thing in America than it was elsewhere. But it was elsewhere. Yeah, I mean, you guys had, you know, other
different things.
Other different things, that we won't discuss. But yes.
Anyway, so Lady Pirates, they all look a bit sort of like the 80s workout gear here.
They do. They're getting physical. Oh my God.
Yeah.
The little crotch shorts on the one with a headband in the back. Headband. I love that. Yeah. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. then Dante regales his mom with the story of how he got double crossed by the Contessa and found the orphans and ended up here, all while laying on a heavy guilt abandonment trip.
Yes.
classic
boob armor going on here. Which makes no sense, of course. Cause
what's that?
Boob armor.
Oh, boob armor. Classic
boob armor.
I mean,
it doesn't work, but you know.
It's just there to look great.
Yes.
It's there to look great.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about boob armor.
Have we discussed this in the podcast? I don't remember.
We may not have. It may have come up.
Yes.
It came up recently in a review I was doing for another show about boob armor. Meant to accentuate breasts rather than to protect them.
That would be for Comics News Insider, the Jimmy Aquino podcast, if you're looking for another podcast with Edie on it.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Edie does comic reviews there regularly.
I'm doing comic reviews weekly there now.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just dipping my toe in because I missed talking about comics, new comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. Boob armor.
Boob armor.
This stuff doesn't bother me so much because these are kind of like ladies doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
When boob armor really bothers me is when we're like in a medieval setting, clearly a battle setting, right. And it's like, let's define these boobies.
Yeah.
That's when it bugs me.
Yeah, it's a bit silly.
It's a bit silly. Mm. But
great,
in any
great Dante show there. That's a very good
you
Dante
like thing, his yeah. his face is
it's a very that's kind of like classic like stern Dante, but good looking is like if the lighting's
stern
great.
And good looking.
Stern and
with my floppy pirate shirt.
And the floppy pirate hair. It's like very good Dante.
We find out that Mama Dante actually intended maybe intended, mm-hmm. to visit the convent she left him at, but really? He burned it down first.
That little scamp.
And Mama looks proud that he burned it down. Mm. But just then, their ship
kind of looks like your mom here.
You think Mama Dante looks like my mom?
A bit like that.
Yeah. I'm sure she'd be very thrilled by the comparison.
I'll point it out to her.
Yeah. Well, see, this is part of our move now, is we're now living with my mom, mm-hmm. in a multi-family home. So we have our place and she has hers, but the three of us are all hanging out now. So, yeah. mm-hmm. you know, that's a thing you do when you get older.
It is. It is.
My mom's a trip.
She is. She is a trip. It's much easier because she's fun.
She is fun. It's very true. It's very true. And not an abandonment fun mom.
No.
See, this is like Dante's mom certainly looks like fun and interesting.
She's a very loving and supportive mom.
She's a very loving and supportive mom. Mm-hmm. See, what it was is she got all the weird stuff out of her system before she had me. So, you know.
It's a shame we can't really get her on the podcast because you have to get her to read Dante. And I'm not sure she would do. I mean, she might.
She would do it because you drew it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't want to force her to do that.
She's a big Simon fan.
Right. But I don't want to force her to read my comic.
That's all right. She read my comics when I was a kid.
Did she?
Yeah.
Well, that's because you, that's an obligation, a parental obligation. You've got to do that.
True. Anyway, we digress.
My mom. Look,
oh my gosh, that's so funny. Mom. Oh my god, both the moms are on this page. It does look like your mom. There's one of the half boob armor.
Yep.
Ladies of Escondida, mm-hmm. definitely has a Simon's mom vibe.
Definitely.
Anyway, carry on. So their ship is capsized. There's a big wall of water comes out. By black dragon ships who are dive bombing the hell out of our anti-heroes.
It's the Spider-Man shot.
Oh my God. It really is the Spider-Man shot.
It's Dante getting rained on from above with the water.
But he's holding, he's got his hand up.
Right, a la Steve Ditko.
Yeah, if you remember the famous Spider-Man series of panels in the issue where he's getting crushed by a giant... I think it's like a building is falling on
Doc Ock's underwater layer and it's falling apart.
Crushing him.
And he's dying
slowly.
He's got to get out of there, otherwise Aunt May's going to die.
He's fighting against his classic,
the classic Spider-Man battle. Comic. Yes, exactly. Anyway.
But that really is, it almost really looks like a direct reference. It can't be. No way John Byrne's read that.
He might.
You think? He would have read that Spidey?
It's comics. I mean, you know comics. All right. If you're in comics, you read comics.
Sure.
It's an iconic image. Anyway, this weird orange ship is, I don't believe these ships particularly, but anyway.
Yeah, they're zooming around. Sunfish.
Yeah, they're, I don't know. Anyway,
so
some action, spaceships
led
flying.
Led by the Black Dragon's mm-hmm. Murakami.
Yep.
The airships blast Dante's mum nearly into the water.
Right.
Great
action composition here.
Yeah, she's sort of flipping over.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And nearly kill her.
Yep.
Before Dante pushes her out of the line of fire. Yeah. And then they're sort of dive bombing again, mm-hmm. strafing, and then Dante defends himself against basically an entire fleet of Black Dragon airships with only the Huntsman.
Again, Huntsman, the uber weapon that can defeat everybody.
It's really just the MacGuffin gun.
It's like whenever it suits.
This arc.
Whenever it's
required. It's really on display here, though. They're leaning heavy on that Huntsman. So Murakami shows up on what's left of Dante's now second shipwrecked ship.
of this story Ishmael. Arc.
Yeah. To challenge him to that duel he's been thirsting for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dante really just makes quick work of him.
Yeah.
Dante's really invincible in this story.
Pretty much. I think it's an issue.
And then weirdly his mom tells him to like spare Murakami.
Mm-hmm. He'll make a good hostage. And cuts no ice with Dante.
Yeah, Dante's like, nah, I'm gonna slice his throat.
Straight up murders him.
You know, and I'm figuring that's why he threatened the children, you know, so we don't care about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know. He was gonna cut their throat so we can cut his throat, no problems. And Mama Dante is like, don't. And we're like, why do you care? And anyway, Mama Dante's Marguerite compatriot is like, he's his father's son because he slits his throat. And I'm like, don't you all kill people? Like, what's going on?
They're pirates.
What is with this moralizing?
Yeah.
Very strange.
Like, Marguerite, like, literally hung and killed, like, 25 people.
I think Marguerite's just jealous of Dante just being around.
Probably.
And so she's just trying to whisper in her ear, like, Iago, like, he's a bad dude.
An all-female
pirate
crew.
That's true. He's interloping, isn't he?
It's true.
Yeah. He's his father's son in that he's a dude, and we don't like them.
Yes.
Anyways, Dante and his mom then hold hands sort of touchingly as she allows him to come aboard their ship.
Yeah.
And he comes aboard grinning and asking, you still have an all-female crew?
Yeah.
While the sun sets on his objectification.
Yes.
All in a day's work for Dikolai Nante.
Indeed. The end.
The end.
There we go.
So, yeah.
There we go.
We did it.
We did it.
Another, that's a long one, I'm telling
was
you.
Was it?
Yeah, it's a long one.
We haven't 58 minutes so far.
You're breaking the fourth wall here, honey. We haven't wrapped the episode.
There's a
yet.
Fourth wall? Okay.
Okay. Well,
we do try and keep these things under a certain amount of time because we don't want to waste your time.
It's true. Just natter on too long.
Well, we do like to entertain and rabbit on and digress and witter. I think it's kind of rude to take too much of your time up.
Simon's very concerned with that.
Indeed.
So we are closing the book on Dante for today.
Yes, we are.
But we will be back next week with the Sea Falcon.
Sea Falcon.
And some of Agent of Destruction. It's a longer set of issues than this one. So I really think if we want to stay under that hour, we're going to have to maybe split. Okay. But we'll see.
We'll work it out.
We'll work it out, as we always do. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. We so enjoyed coming back to you. If you like us, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Leave us ratings and reviews wherever you can.
It helps.
It really helps. And tell your friends to please join our book club and read along with us.
Mm-hmm.
Follow us. I think the Humble Bundle's still going. We may as well.
Yeah, there's a Humble Bundle right now for like that's basically selling you the whole bunch of Nikolai Dante for
the
price you name.
For the
plus,
price you name.
I mean, Slaying the Horn God, a bunch of other stuff, which is like really classic.
And it benefits cancer UK.
Cancer research, yes.
Yeah.
So get on that if you can.
Yeah, if you can.
Because even if you own it, even if you own it already, get the digital copy because then you can keep it on your phone or
and
something.
And that's how you convince your friends to jump on board.
And if you get, and even if you like doing charitable donations. And you feel like giving some money to charity, do that.
Yeah, you can't lose.
You cannot.
Follow us on Twitter. Twitter still exists, amazingly.
Yep.
At PodTGDR.
Mm-hmm.
We are also on Instagram at PodTGDR, I believe, as well.
Yes.
Let us know what you think of the podcast. We're also on Facebook, I should say. Facebook, Great Dante Read Through Community.
Yeah, there's...
Well,
yeah, the Dante page we've got now, too.
Yeah, we have a Nikolai Dante page thing, but I haven't really done much with it.
We need to do something with it. Sorry.
Let us know what you think of the podcast. So we're spinning out here. It's late.
Yeah.
use all these channels to communicate with us. Please join the book club, participate, tell us what you think of the podcast, of Dante, comics, whatever is on your mind. I'm Edie.
And I'm Simon.
And we will catch you next time.
Bye.